All right.
Yes.
All right, we're in Galatians. Galatians chapter 5. Galatians chapter 5, and last week we were looking at the works of the flesh are these. And we saw that, and then we got into 22, and we talked about the idea of the fruit of the Spirit, one fruit. There's many things. If the fruit of the Spirit is there, there's many things that will manifest themselves. But the word fruit is like the word sin, like the word fear. Fears is not more than one. Fear itself is a state of being. But you can have many fears. One is not a plural of the other. Fruits. There's a fruit of something. But fruits is not the plural of that. Sin is a state of being, but sins is not the plural of that. Okay? So fruit is like that. And one of the proofs of that is the fruit of the Spirit is, and then there's many things. So, Jesus Christ said this, you'll know a tree by its fruits, what grows on it.
That's right. Okay?
And if you want to know if I've been acting with the Spirit of God or against the Spirit of God, well, has there been love? Okay? Is there joy? And let me tell you something. Again, C.S. Lewis's autobiography, and I'm not a great big C.S. Lewis fan or anything else, but certainly what he said in his autobiography, I love it. It's called Surprised by Joy. C.S. Lewis had been a famous atheist in England for years, and then got saved and born again and began to defend Christianity. He was kind of shocked to people when it did it. But when he wrote his autobiography, the shock to him was the joy of Christianity. If your Christianity is a drudgery to you, it ain't what I got.
That's right.
It ain't what God
exactly
gives.
Right.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
Christianity is a joy. Yes, having Jesus Christ is a joy. It's the fruit of the Spirit is joy. Okay? Love, joy.
I'm sorry, drudgery? Definition, please?
Drudgery is doing the same old thing over and over again that's boring.
I'm so bored.
Like work.
Why do I have to do this?
You know, think of a job at work that if you had to do it all day long, it would just drive you crazy. That's drudgery.
Today alone.
All right, there you go. Peace. Peace.
Yes, thank you.
You know, peace. That's one of the things that salvation gives.
Pastor, is this list kind of like the First Peter list where one builds on the other, or is this a...
No, I don't think so. I think it's just these are all the things that generally will be there. Let me think about that. I don't want to say you're wrong. I guess because I hadn't given that a lot of solid thought. Ruth Ann?
I don't think necessarily they build upon it, because the one of First Peter says, first this, then this.
Yeah, it certainly gives you an order, yeah.
But
I can't see a person without love certainly isn't going to have joy and not going to have peace, you know. So that, you know, it might be in descending order of you know, but again, peace. The fruit of righteousness is peace, all right? And the effect of righteousness is quietness and assurance forever. That's an assurance there, okay? That's what God does. That's why these people out there, you know, with Dale and Brother McVeigh are preaching there in Maine, to get some other lunkhead standing up there telling them, oh, don't worry about it if you're doubting yourself. Oh, you guys are all, you know, they're mixing you all up and everything else. And, you know, and the Bible just said that's a mouth that just needs to be stopped, you know, and such. Because the assurance is the salvation. That's what it is, okay? And it brings its own love. It brings its own joy. It brings its own peace. It's not something you have to drum up. It's something that's beyond you, something greater than you, something that takes you over. Gentleness. Well, excuse me, long-suffering, okay? Long-suffering. And what does that mean? Well, for one thing, it means that traditional short fuse you've had will be gone. Okay? And everybody has a short fuse in one place or another. And, you know, it's that idea Randy's mother used to say, you're about to step on the last nerve I have, you know. It's a great statement, you know. And, you know, just that idea, you're driving me nuts. And it's to your honor to have a long fuse. It's to your honor. People who have a long fuse, you like a lot better. People who have a short fuse, it's hard to be around them, okay? And, you know, they just have a short fuse. And, you know, what's a skunk do when it's scared or bothered? It squirts on people. What's the person with those short fuses? They get angry at them, all right? You know, it's like pooping on somebody. Oh, you made me mad. I'll poop on you or something. You show your anger. You're just an idiot. Go ahead.
How do you extend your fuse? Like, I know, like, you can be a little bit more long-suffering, but how do you, like, extend your fuse?
Willfully.
Put yourself out there.
Willfully. Yeah. Willfully. You have to want to.
Yeah.
The people in here who can't get control of your temper, it's because you don't want
That's
to.
That's right. I agree with that. Yes, sir.
There it is. You don't want to. Okay?
And you know the Lord.
You don't want to. You really believe you have it coming to you and that you can do this.
That's right.
And the other thing is you want people to pity you. You really long for people to pity you. Look at my circle. Look how hard it is on me inside. Now let me tell you something. God loses his temper. He gets angry. Okay? Jesus Christ got angry. The apostles got angry. That doesn't mean they sinned. It's what you do with that anger that makes it sin. Okay? The apostle Peter said, account that the long suffering of our Lord is salvation. Thank God he had a longer temper than, you know, it didn't have as short a fuse as you do. Okay? Mm-hmm. You know, if you had God's power, most people you know would be in hell right now.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
You know, you just, and you'd have been the guilty one. That's why God doesn't give you that kind of power. And such. But it's that idea that if God's working in you, you'll be long-suffering. It just is. You just will be. And you say, well, what if people walk all over me? There's a point where there's an honor to it, and then there's a point where you have to stop it. Yes. I understand that. But if you're stopping it at the drop of a hat, something's wrong, okay? Needs to be something where you've thought it out and realized it's gone too far.
At that point, wasn't it you said at the point you defend yourself is when you need to defend your office? Can you reiterate on that, please?
Yeah, that's not a bad thing. If someone's attacking your person, Randy, you're an idiot. Okay, you think I'm an idiot, so what? Okay. What did that hurt? Did it hurt anything? Is the sun going to come up tomorrow because I called you an idiot? All right, it's not going to do anything. But if I call your boss and say, Randy's really cheating at work, now you do need to defend that, okay? That's your job, that's your office, that's what you have to do, and you have that to defend, okay?
So protect your reputation?
Your reputation when it comes to your responsibilities.
Okay.
Okay? When it comes to your responsibilities.
It wouldn't affect anyone else but you. Like, only you.
Yeah. Yeah. If I call you an idiot, you're not an idiot. Does that make you an idiot? No. Okay. If I call you a horse, are you a horse? No. Okay. It doesn't change anything. You know, I have learned if people are very suspicious, usually it's because they themselves are untrustworthy people. Okay. If you're ever in a house with somebody who locks everything carefully and, you know, makes sure that no one counts everything, no one's, usually that's a thief. Okay? They're a thief, and so they just suspect everybody's a thief, and they're constantly watching for that and such. You know, that's one of the first things I used to learn when I, you know, I'd hang out with different guys, we'd get apartments and that together. If there was one who locked everything and kept it there, watch out for that guy, he's a thief. Okay? He's scared that you're all just like he is. And people will accuse you of what they are. They will accuse you of what they are. And the thing is, be long-suffering to that. Okay? Take it. So what? Okay?
I was going to say, depending on how you defend your reputation might determine your reputation.
Yeah, that's right. Again, you know, let's say that, you know, every day I walk by Nick and I just tell him he's an idiot and you're just a jerk and... you know, little things to jab him and jag him behind. Every mistake he makes, I come up and make sure I remind him of it and such. And things that are unsure, take it the wrong way and such. And one day, he's had enough of that. He just comes up and he gives it to me and I'm giving it back. And people walk by. What do they see? Two idiots arguing. He has just put himself on my level. Okay? That's what he's done. And he didn't, and, you know, he might have some people pat his back, Nick, you really gave it to him or whatever, but they basically think we were both jerks. Yeah, that's basically what happens. Watch out for those two. If there's somebody giving you that kind of a hard time, sooner or later, people notice. They see. They know what's going on. They're not stupid. Chances are, if that person gives you a hard time like that, they give other people a hard time. Okay? And you just leave it alone. I know when I worked at Radio Shack, we'd get these young boys in just out of high school. They'd be working or something. And you know, usually good boys. You'd be at a cash register, and there'd be some lady or fella would come up and buy something off of them and not like, just chew them out. Just tell them how stupid you are and such. And when that person would leave, I would just explain and say, you need to realize that that person does that to everyone they know. Oh, you know them? No, I don't know them. I just know that they were unreasonable to you. And everybody that knows them suffers through that with that person, okay? And it has nothing to do with you. That's just what that person is. And you handled it right by just being quiet and letting it go, okay? You know, we used to, there in Wellsville, we used to have two doors, one that was fixed and one that opened. And I used to love it because it just seemed that people would turn around, you call this a store, what's Radio Shack come to that? And I always hit that wrong door. Blum! I just sat there and smiling. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just amazing how often they would do that, you know. So, hey, you think, bong. But again, learn to take it. Be long-suffering. It is the fruit of the Spirit. Why? Because it's what God does.
Can I say something?
Go right ahead.
You'll
certainly
the
can.
The Lord remind you that remember the time people put up with you.
Yeah,
when people put up with you. When people put up with you, Dale.
Yeah.
And I just was like, ah.
Yeah.
I get it, yeah.
Ain't quite like a sting like that.
Yeah.
I was thinking something like what Pastor said last night was really good. The other day I was singing, I went out, I wasn't singing loud or anything. I just sang a little hymn on the porch, and Donna's just late, slammed her window shut.
Yeah.
Really hard. And I was thinking, I was like, God, please deal with her.
Yeah.
I don't know who Pastor Hayne said yesterday. He said, you know, you get mercy with certain things. Sometimes he gives mercy.
That's right.
Well.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted to kind
of, you know. You know, again, another thing C.S. Lewis said in his book, Mere Christianity, he just said this. He said, I always heard that you were supposed to love the sinner and hate the sin. And I always thought, well, that's pretty stupid. And then one day I realized, oh, I do it with me. You know, I somehow managed to love me and hate the sin. You know, why can't I do it with other people?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Actually, I think about 2 weeks ago, I was able to perfectly practice that.
Good.
You know, you mind if I get the story?
Go right ahead.
About 2 weeks ago, I had to take a coworker with me to one of the other houses because he wanted to work out some personal debt, but we kept on waiting for him in the waiting room. One of my coworkers, he wants to offer me some weed. I say no. He wants to offer me some beer. I say no. He said, can't say he didn't try to be nice. And I remember what you said. Don't try and act, oh my gosh, you tried to, like, no. You taught me that that's really them trying to be nice.
And they were.
And
yeah.
I still acted civil amongst them.
That's right. In other words, if you didn't hear that, Randy, you know, he was somewhere waiting for someone. Someone offered him some weed. Someone offered him some beer. Instead of acting holier than thou, why did that person offer that? They were trying to be nice to Randy. So don't be a jerk, okay? Now, there might be certain circumstances where you need to say more, but not in that one.
Yeah.
Don't be a jerk, okay?
It still goes on. As when I was taking that coworker home, I later demonstrated what you just said. Love the person, hate the sin. And he immediately recognized that.
Good. That's excellent, Randy. You did a good job of that. All right, so the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness. You know what David, King David said? He said to the Lord, thy gentleness has made me great. Thy gentleness has made me great. In other words, you know what? David screwed up like everybody else screws up. David made mistakes. David didn't do things right sometimes. And you know what? God handled it with gentleness. You know, there's nothing like working for somebody, making a mistake, and they don't call you stupid, they don't bite your head off, they just come and show you what you did wrong and go on again. And, you know, it's a tremendous thing to be able to do that. A parent that can do that with children is one of the most gracious gifts that any child could ever have. Somebody who can, and I understand if it's disobedience and they're purposely not paying attention, I understand that's got to be punished. But, you know, that ability to just go and gently show someone what they've done wrong or whatever, what a grace from God to be able to have that. You know, what a grace from God. Gentleness. Goodness. Just doing good. Goodness. When Jesus Christ died, Peter got up and said he was a man that did good. Okay? That's how I explained him. He's a man that did good. You know, wouldn't it be something if we went down to your funeral home and you're laying there in the casket and people just talk about the good that you did? You know, you're just a good person to be around and such. And you can do that. Wow. Start being good. Do good things for people. Goodness. Okay? Faith. It's the fruit of the Spirit. Faith. Trusting God. Knowing that God will take care of things. It's part of what God works in a person. Meekness. Again, what is meekness? Not having that trigger where, are you blaming me? Are you telling me I'm wrong? You know, and defensiveness. Right? The opposite of meekness is defensiveness. The worst character traits I see in this church invariably come from defensiveness.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Yep.
Defensiveness. You think that someone's attacking you. You think that someone stepped on your rights. You think that someone's accusing you. You think that someone's not giving you the honor you need to have. You know, you think that someone's saying something about your children or to your children, and you get all defensive, and it is the single worst character trait that you do in this church is when you get defensive. The opposite of defensiveness is meekness, okay? Waiting, letting it flow over, let God handle it, okay? Again, Jesus Christ standing in front of Pontius Pilate. And it says Pilate marveled because he didn't say anything. Marveled. How many times, Dale, have you seen the cops come up and guys start blabbing? I didn't do anything, it was them, you know, and such. And, you know, it's just, kids will do that. It wasn't me, you know, Zane did it, not me, you know, and such. And, you know, you see that kind of thing. Meekness is the opposite. You stand there. And you just let the truth straighten it all out. If the truth and God can't straighten it out, chances are you can't, okay? You know, Moses, again, where they stood and said, you take too much on yourself. I can't imagine daring say that to Moses. And I can't imagine what I would have said back, you know? I'm the one that was up there on the mount. I'm the one that had to stand there 40 days without eating and get the tablets. I'm the one that was out here in Sinai when you guys were in Egypt, you know. I'm the one that he said things to. I'm the one that, you know. That's how I'd handle it. You know what Moses did? He said, well, let's all come out tomorrow with our censers. And let's let God choose, okay? Why? Because that's the fruit of the Spirit. God gave him what to do. Let God handle it. Let God defend it. Okay? What's that?
Censors.
Censors, what you put incense in. Okay? And they brought them all out, and God opened up the earth. And there's men that went down quick, meaning alive, in their flesh, down into the pit.
Where is that?
In the book of Numbers. Okay? Read the book of Numbers, and you'll find that story. Somewhere around Numbers 15, 16, somewhere in there, okay?
Wasn't it half a tribe of Korah?
Well, it was the Korathites that did it, okay?
Why did God send people that are alive down to hell?
Because they rebelled against the man of God, and he was sick of it. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. If God has given you something to do, what's God given Dale to do? Monroe County jails and a family. And a trustee in the church. Okay?
Sunday school teacher.
Okay? So the point is, if I want to attack one of those and I irritate God, that's all Dale needs is for me to irritate God. That's all he needs. Okay? You know, what's God given Tanya to do? Substitute Sunday school teacher and a mother.
That's right.
If someone wants to attack that, all they need to do is irritate God. Okay? You're a mother, Sunday school teacher. If someone attacks that, all they need to do is irritate God. Okay? And if they irritate God, let God handle it. That's hard. A lot of times God won't handle it because we do first. Yeah. Okay? We handle it first, and then God backs off. He don't want his signature on your work.
Sure don't.
Okay? No. He's not going to sign that junk that you do. All right?
Yes,
he's not going to go ahead and do that. Leave it alone. Let God put his signature on it. Let God. Do you trust God to do that? Okay?
That's right. It's hard.
Yeah. Oh, I trust God for my soul. I trust him for my daily living, but not for that.
No, that's right.
No. Yeah. Why? Because your pride's so far out in front of you that you can't operate. Okay?
Pastor?
Yes?
Having seen him do that once, personally, I'm scared for the people
that... That's right. And the thing is, just let it alone and let God handle it. And it's amazing. You'll find yourself sorrow. You'll find yourself intervening with God. Take it easy on that person, okay?
You had talked before about when somebody attacks your office, that you are supposed to defend that. When do you know when to defend your office and when to step back and just...
That's real hard, Jennifer. When in doubt, be quiet, okay? You know, if it's a matter of, you know, your homeschooling, if someone comes in and attacks your homeschooling, defend your homeschooling, okay? You know, if they're attacking you and saying you're slothful in your homeschooling, I'd be quiet. You know, just leave it alone, all right? By the way, has there ever been a homeschooling mother that hasn't kicked herself from time to time feeling that she was slothful? Has there ever been one? You know?
Did they actually attack Moses' office or...
His person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that same thing with Miriam and Aaron. When they came and said, you know, you married an Ethiopian and you've done the wrong thing. And it probably was wrong. But it wasn't their business. Yeah, it wasn't their business.
Set aside now, what is the significance of the incense? Like, going out with the censer, what was the point of that?
Incense was used by God as a symbol of prayer. It says that in the Psalms, let my prayer go before thee as incense. And in the book of Revelation, it talks about the incense going up with the prayers of the saints. It's symbolic of that, okay? All right, so meekness, temperance. And temperance is having the right amount of things, okay? Temperance. You know... For example, my wife now, least little bit of sugar, throws her sugar way off, okay? If her sugar's ever over 100, she's upset over it. You know, she just is. She just works to keep it constantly below 100 when she tests it. A little bit of sugar, it's over. She's lost her ability to be temperate with sugar, okay? She can't do that anymore. But if you don't have that, be temperate with sugar. Say, well, I've never had a sugar problem. Yeah, just keep shoveling it in. You know, sooner or later you will, all right? Yeah. You know, and you'll have it. But if you eat small amounts of it, you'll be fine. If you're one of those people that's already broken that, you can't do it anymore, okay? You know, I know people, I never watch a television. You know, my family, we don't have a television in our house. No, we just turn the computer on and watch things off of that, you know. Or go over to other people's houses to watch the NFL games and watch this cheerleader strip down or something. But, you know, the thing is, if you have a television, be temperate with it.
That's right.
Be temperate with it. Look, you got an on and off button. Use that on and off button. Use discretion. If you don't have a television, be temperate about that. Use your head, all right? Don't be walking around looking down your nose at everybody that's got one. Temperate. Temperate in what you do. Do you like to study? Be temperate. Get the right amount of study in, okay? You know, do you like to relax? Be temperate. Get the right amount. You know, there's some people that need to rest, okay? They need to rest. If Jim ever goes to lay down to rest, I've called and Bonnie said he's resting. You know what? She don't want him bothered. You know why? Because he doesn't do it very often. He needs to rest. This is his job right now. He's resting. We're not bothering Jim, okay? You know what? If you need to rest, rest. Be temperate about it. Get the right amount. You know, temperate is putting the right amount of things involved. And the Spirit of God will always help you to take that level and keep things on the bubble. Okay? It's where He wants it to be kept. Not too much, not too little of anything. The right amount of things that you're supposed to have.
You posted something. What was that thing you posted about level? A bunch of levels.
Oh, it's not a picture. Yeah,
wrong on all.
Wrong. Levels. In other words, I put a picture on the internet. It showed a bunch of levels, and somebody written the word wrong in every one of them. Said this is wrong on many levels. All right.
Well, you know,
humor.
Would that be a reason why when people get saved, their flesh, you know, their flesh part doesn't leave entirely? Is that they, you know, is because they need to be temperate?
Well, it's one of the things they need to learn. Keep in mind that the battle that Adam lost, God requires every saved person to fight every day. Okay? Every day. All right? Constantly going on. And it's one of those things He wants to get the victory in it every day. All right. Temperance. And it says, against such there is no law. There's none of those things you can find a law against. All right? And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affection and lusts. How much can a crucified man do? Not a lot. Okay? He can lust for things or whatever, but he can't do anything about it. Okay? So the thing is, it says crucify the flesh. Put it, and that's why the Apostle Paul says, make not provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. Okay? Yep. If you don't want to drink, don't fill your pantry with liquor. All right? You know, if, you know, don't make provision for those things. And I've known people had to get off the internet. They just had to do it. They just having the internet was enough provision for them that they couldn't handle that. It was too much for them. I've known other people had to get rid of this or had to get rid of that or something. You yourself have to know what you can and you
That's
can't
right.
handle.
Yep.
Okay? But, go ahead.
If you have something in your life that is like pivotal, basically, you have to learn how to manage it. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to accomplish certain things, but you can't seem to manage it. But then if you try without it, then you can't accomplish those things. So you go back to it, and like, how do you...
You know, the thing is, every one of us, if we were to poll the jury and go down, every one of us has some place where there's a battle we're in right now. Every one of us has some place where there's something that we're fighting that very thing, okay? And every once in a while, you get a victory over something. If you look back at things you fought 2 years ago, it's different now. Okay, we all have those. That's why it says pray for one another. You know, do that. We can all look around and laugh at each other over the things you can't overcome. All right, or we can sit there and grieve for each other over the things you can't overcome. If you'll notice this, I do my best not to jump in my people's lives or whatever over little faults they have unless I see them purposely ignoring them to their hurt, okay? To their hurt, where it's one of these things where I see it, it's stopping them from growing. It's stopping them from getting where they need. Every one of us have places where we're wrestling, okay? We are. And every once in a while, you know, a man of God will come along and preach something. He doesn't even know you, and he hits it. Wham! You know, that nameless, aimless moment. He shot an arrow in the air, and where it lands, wham! It hit John Asquith in the heart, all right? And, you know, and those kind of things happen. And one of my favorite stories, again, was Frank Townsend having that black preacher in from Tennessee. I think they call him Freight Train Harris. And he had him in for a tent meeting. And... it's just an old man, this tall, skinny, black, old man, you know, white hair and such. And he gets up there, and my friend Frank said, man, you got to hear this guy preach. Well, about that time, you know, I used to have a job where I drove around in a pickup truck and did estimates. And, you know, when you drive around in a pickup truck and do estimates, and you're in a place like Columbia, South Carolina, which was a test market for all new fast food places. They actually called it that. And it was just for the demographics were just right. If they were, McDonald's was trying a new sandwich, Columbia got it.
What's an estimate?
Where you estimate how much something will cost. Okay, people want to know, well, how much will it cost to paint my house? And you estimate it, and you tell them. So the thing is, I'd be driving around and, you know, a leg of chicken here, a milkshake there, this kind of thing. Next thing you know, I'm busting through britches and everything. And finally the day came when I couldn't fit in a pair of size 36 pants anymore. And I just went to Walmart and I bought, and some of you have heard this story before, but I bought a pair of size 38 pants and I put them on. So the first day I've ever done it, I walk in and I sit in this tent and this old black preacher. One of the first things he said, he starts preaching on sin. He said, "Any white boys with your size 38 pants?" And he said, "And then you sit and criticize the women. You sit and criticize the people smoking. You sit and criticize the people that are drinking beer. And you can't shut your mouth. You just got to eat that stuff." And I'm like, "This is the first day. I've never worn them before." The only time in my life a man's ever preached on size 38 pants. You know what I did? I went and got rid of them. And, you know it. Oh, finally learned to fit into size 36. Yeah. You know? Good thinking. Go to a 40. Yeah. But, you know, the point is every one of us has some place, and the Spirit of God somewhere wants to get at it. And it's a matter of long suffering. There's only one, I've only rebuked one woman ever for how she dressed. And it's a woman that, to be honest with you, had no natural beauty at all. And used to wear these tight jeans and sweatshirts and such, and her and her husband having a terrible marriage and everything. And after she got saved, she just started dressing so ladylike and everything. And this one particular time, she came walking around the side of this house, and she's carrying a couple things and just dressed like hell, and I rebuked her to her face. And you know what? Never done it since, never done it again, and never regretted doing it. And she loved me for it. You know why? Because it was just such a gift to her husband when she dressed like a lady. It was just such a gift to him. And really, she raised daughters that raised them to dress like ladies and such. And you know, just the only person I've ever done it with. I can't imagine ever doing it again. And yet that moment, it was just the right thing to do. I'm just telling you. Needed to be. All right. "They that are Christ have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us walk in the Spirit." That's the simple part. Walk in the Spirit. And yet, is it simple? No, because there's always 1,000 things you have to learn. You know, your kid comes home from his first day, the first grade. He's got this big piece of paper with the letter A on it. And he wrote A. And you put it on the refrigerator. And he's so proud of himself. He's learned the letter A. He doesn't realize that there's about 13 more years of a lot of stuff to learn. All right. Letter A is just the beginning. All right. You're going to bring B home tomorrow and it's not going to be quite as exciting. All right. It's just expected of you. And such.
Wait till he gets to Z.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the same thing. You know, in the early days when a person gets saved, they have those first days of walking right and such, and it's wonderful. And then God starts requiring more and more out of them and such. Lord, and, you know,
but. Got all those plates going.
Yeah. Trying to spin all those plates. That's funny. All right. So if we walk in the Spirit, let's walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory. What is that? Look at me. Look at the good I'm doing. You know what? Every single person needs from time to time to do something good and somebody else get the credit. Mm. Every single person needs from time to time to do something good and nobody notice. Everybody needs from time to time to have that happen, okay? And why? Get rid of your vainglory. Why are you doing this? For vainglory? Want everybody to see you? We put a spotlight on you in church. You can do a tap dance in the front or whatever. You know, but the point is, why are you doing it? I hope you're doing this unto the Lord. If the Lord should choose to magnify you, that's fine. But you're a lot better off if you wait to the judgment seat of Christ and let him handle it all then and pour it out on you, okay? You know, Jesus Christ talked about the Pharisees. They have the reward on this earth. Hey, I gave money, look, you know? And look what I've done. Okay, you got your reward. That's what you wanted. Everybody give him a big hug. You gave money or whatever. And so the thing is, don't be desirous of vainglory.
I hate those things where you do something. You're like, okay, now you can sign this little piece of paper and put it up.
Yeah.
or on Facebook it says they donated to this place and this place. I just hate those things.
Yep. So don't be desirous of vainglory. All right. And it says provoking one another, envying one another. And you'd be amazed how many people, you know, right now I don't have a problem with this. I can honestly say this. But I've had times in the church that if there's one person I praised, other people got mad. Okay? Other people got upset, jealous, because that person got praised. And you know what? Sometimes you need to praise a person who hasn't ever really done a lot good. And maybe one time stepped out and did something good. Praise them. Praise them. Okay? Give a little praise to that person. Let it be known what they're. And then there's somebody who's done 10 times. Well, I've done 10 times as much. You're not praising me. No, you've got it straight, okay? You know what? When a 2-year-old goes potty, you know, you praise him. But I don't run up and hug Dale because he goes potty, you know? You know, he's got it down. He's already got that straight, all right? And, you know, and so. Yeah. So, again, it's one of those things that, yeah, I may praise somebody in the church who traditionally. And another time, it might be to provoke other people to do good. Okay? Mm. Provoke them to do it. Yes. And sometimes it's just because it's the right thing to do. All right? People just need to sometimes know the people who are laboring behind the scenes. I'll never forget, in May of 1980, I was at Dr. Peter Ruckman's graduation ceremony for his college. And all of a sudden, he said, hey, and he called a man's name and said, get out here. Nobody came. He said, no, I'm telling you to get out here, even if you had to shut the equipment out. Pretty soon, this guy walks out, some jeans and cowboy boots, and he stands there. Peter Ruckman says, you see that man? He said, 20 years ago, he walked up here and said, God sent me here to record every word you say. And he said, I just shrugged my shoulders. He said, since that time, he said, my ministry has gone all over the world. No one knows this man's name. No one knows who he is. He's just taking care of all the recording. See, if you ever go on the, you know, whether you like Peter Ruckman or don't like him, okay? The point is, there's just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of his stuff out there organized and for people to listen to. And he made that kid come out. Wasn't a kid anymore. But he made him come out, said, well, look at him, okay? And the guy then just walked back again. He didn't want anybody seeing him. God sent him to do this, okay? God sent him to do it. And just Peter Ruckman wanted people to know, hey, that guy's back there doing this. You know, another example of that happened to me again in 1980. This would have been January 1980. I'd had a reference. When I was overseas, there was a hairdresser that came to visit one of the guys that I was stationed with. And she was probably 30, 35 years old or something like that, interested in this one guy from Spartanburg, South Carolina. She came from the Atlanta area. And, you know, she's so happy to see all these young GIs, you know, in their early 20s and such. And write her, oh, there's a girl that you need to write to, you know, and she said, and so she has me write to this girl, and the girl's writing back to me and such. And, you know, so it's one of those things that I have to go visit their family when I, you know, am driving from New York to Florida, and I pull into this family. It's the Dombrowski family. And now a lot of people have heard of Curtis Hudson, the Sword of the Lord, and Curtis Hudson really started the whole idea of bus ministries. They actually wrote a huge book of the bus ministries and what it did and everything like that. And I'm sitting there in this house, and this guy Dombrowski got a few pretty daughters and a wife. And by the way, his daughter and I just didn't hit it off at all. Just, we both knew it the second we met each other. It was a polite weekend, and that's all it was. But regardless of that, this guy Dombrowski's there, and he owned a bus company. And he told me, he said, yeah, he said, we're just talking. He said, I gave the first bus to the church, and I'm the one that explained to the pastor the idea of this bus ministry. And he said, every bus they have, he said, eventually I bought it for them. I go out every Sunday morning and fix them. He's not in the book. This book that was sold all over the United States of how to do bus ministries. You know why? He didn't want to be in the book. He just wanted to be the guy that got it going, gave the buses, greasy every morning, seeing to it that they were ready, seeing to it they could go out there, and never got one bit of the credit or anything else. Where do you how do you think God handled that? Okay? You know why? He didn't want the vainglory. He just wanted to see to those kids could come to church. okay? Wanted to see to it that all those, you know, people in the inner city and that could make it to that church and such, and wanted to see to it. So let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. In fact, that's the house where I went into, and the older sister walks up, grabs my hair here, pulls it up, and says, oh, still got full down sideburns. Welcome to the South. All right, Galatians chapter 6. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, well, is there anybody in this church that at one time or another hasn't been overtaken in a fault in our sight? Okay. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one. Now watch this. In the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Now why the spirit of meekness? Remember, meekness is the opposite of defensiveness. Here's why. Okay. I'm a woman, and I walk up to Tanya and tell her, I don't like how you're taking care of Caleb. You know what the first thing Tanya's going to do? She's going to point out every mistake I've made with my kids. That's just the way people handle that, don't they? Mm-hmm. Isn't that the first thing you do? Doesn't it gall you when somebody comes up and says things to you and you're looking at what they do? And what's the average person do? They say, well, here's what you do, okay? Don't they? So, number one, if you think you need to speak to somebody, be prepared for that backlash. Yeah. Just take it. And what they say will probably be accurate, probably skewed, probably a little bit warped, all right? Probably a little bit out of context. And just say something like, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. That is a serious problem. We can pray for each other, okay? And that's not it. Well, you know the worst thing you do? Yeah, but it's not as bad as what you do, you know? And my mother told me I could do that. And, you know, you're just pulling it. Now what's happened? Two idiots are arguing now. That's all it is. There's no more good being done. There's not a single good thing coming out of this. Just two idiots arguing. That's all that it's turned into. So it says, if any be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. You want to know something I've learned about enemies? Sooner or later, they swap places. Sure. They begin to act just like each other. Okay? You just be amazed. Years ago, when I lived in Utah, a professor at Weber State wrote a book on American history, and he just said this. He said, be very careful in choosing your enemies, because sooner or later you will become just like them. Okay? You'd just be amazed when you pick an enemy how that you become like that person. You just does. Talked about the English coming to, you know, America, the colonists and that. Well, the Indians hide behind trees and shoot and such. What'd the colonists pick up? Hide behind trees and shooting. They became like their enemies. Okay? And it's just, and he went on over and over again and showed in history how that people become just like their enemies, okay? Mm-hmm. What did the Japanese do when they conquered places? They indiscriminately killed everybody they could. What did the Americans do to take Japan? Indiscriminately killed everybody they could, okay? You become just like your enemies. So it said, be very careful in choosing your enemies. And of course, one of the rules is this. If you have an enemy, be very careful of them, because remember, you made them.
What was it you described to me? That's the nature of fallen man, you said?
It's the nature of fallen man. The person you consider an enemy, keep in mind, other people get along with that person. Okay? Other people get along with them. Why can't you? Because you refuse to change. Okay? You want them to change to get along with you, but you refuse to change to get along with that person. You just refuse to do it. You've made up your mind, I'm not going to do it. Now, let me tell you something. Every once in a while, there's somebody that you probably need to protect your family from. We have some situations like that in this church. It's hard for me to argue, okay? So now you have those kind of things where you have to protect your family, but you better be careful, okay? Because you're going to become like that person. Did it ever occur to you maybe the person became that way because they had to protect themselves at one point, okay? And sooner or later they became that way. They got stuck that way. Yeah. It's amazing how things that you voluntarily do now can become habits later, okay? So be very careful with that. So you, if you want to straighten somebody out, be prepared for the backlash from them And don't get defensive. And if you can't do it, stay out of it. Because you'll only make a mess. I have seen people in church swap devils back and forth. Just swap them back and forth. You know, this one, look what they're like. The next 6 months, that guy's like that. And this one's like they were. And I've seen it. And you're just kind of amazed. Oh, my goodness. You know, it's like they're swapping DNA or something. They might as well hug and kiss for what they're doing.
Or just point fingers all day.
All right. Verse 2, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Now, what's the burden in that? The burden is somebody overtaken in a fault, and you're going to help them with this, okay? Someone's overtaken in a burden, and you're going to help them with it, okay? In other words, they can't help themselves in this, but you see a lot of value in that person. You're going to go help them. They're going to attack you for this. They're going to be mean to you in this. The great example of that is a person who's trained to do life-saving. What's a drowning person do? They really try to drag the lifesaver down. Mm-hmm. I think it was McVeigh was telling me, in Australia, they actually train the lifesaver to knock the person out. They don't do that in the United States. In the United States, they train you. They hold that person under until they quit struggling. What if they drown? Well, it's better than both of you drowning, okay? Because you cannot swim with them struggling. You cannot save them with them struggling. You cannot do it. In Australia, they actually teach them a technique to knock that person out that's drowning, and then you bring them in. So the thing is, you may have a friend like that, that you're going to bear burdens together, okay? They're going to lash. They're going to do everything they can and such. You may bear their burdens.
That's a crazy job to have, just like drop down and roll somewhere and help someone drowning. Especially if they have to like take a helicopter out or something like that. It's just insane to think that people do. Like,
yep. What an awful thing, have to sit around on the beach all day. All right, verse 3.
I didn't mean like that.
Yeah. All right. If a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, okay, he deceiveth himself. Now let me tell you. Again, let's go back to the kid that got potty trained. What's the first thing he tells daddy when daddy walks through the door? I went pee-pee in the potty, you know. And it's a huge thing to him. It's huge that they did that. They're stunned that they've reached this point in life, all right? It's a big thing, all right? You know, what's the first thing when somebody, you know, writes that? Hey, daddy, look, grandma, look what I did. It's a huge thing. And you know what the thing is? What's funny is, they don't realize how much they don't know. They're just so happy with what they have done.
Yeah.
What you have to be temperate about in your own life is when you accomplish something to realize, oh, maybe no one else in the church can do what I can do. And for everybody here, there's probably something that you're the only one in the church that could do that, okay? Wow, okay? And you know what? It might please God at some point to manifest that in you, where you're the person that takes care of it. You're the person that handles it. Other people, he may never do that with you. The worst thing in the world is for you to be, daddy, look what I did. You know, don't do that, all right? Don't have that vainglory. Don't start thinking of yourself above and beyond you're supposed to. God's got some ways to knock you down. God's got some ways to make you pretty humble. God's got some ways that you don't want, but he can bring you down to a point where you never thought you'd be there. You know, God told the women of Israel, he said, those of you too dainty don't want to even touch your foot on the ground. He said, I'll bring famine into this city that you'll eat your own children. And they did. Go read it. Okay?
Wow.
You talking about bringing somebody low? We might forgive you one day. Yeah. She's overtaken in a fault.
Yep.
Yeah. Is it still recording? Yeah. It still is. Look at that. All right. Just in case anybody knows, that was Amy Morey who let her phone make that noise. All right. All right, so if a man think himself to be anything, when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. You know, Sammy Allen always has this thing. He says, if you want to know how valuable you are to God, get a bucket of water and stick your head in it. Pull your head back out, and however big the hole is in that bucket, that's how much God needs you. Okay? If God chooses to use you, that's a wonderful thing. But you want to know something? You ladies, you're going to go cook. You go get the dirty dishes to cook with, or you find the clean dishes? You get the clean dishes. And you know what? You know why you want them cleaned after you're done? Because the next time you go to cook, you want clean vessels there. All right? That's what you want. And you know what? When God goes to use somebody, that's the number one thing he's looking for. Is the vessel clean? Is it ready to be used? Okay? Is it ready for that? And that's your job, is to be ready. Ready for God. Woe unto you if God decides to visit and you're not ready. Verse 4, but let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. Okay? So the thing is, be ready for your own stuff. Prove what you do. Whatever you do, do it well. Okay? You know, if all you ever do is once in a while on Sunday help pass the plate, Sunday school, do it well. Do it to the best of your ability. Okay? Do those little things. If all you have to do is just little things, do it to the best of your ability. Do it how you can and do it right. Let every man prove his own work, then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. And every man shall bear his own burden. Now, a lot of people see that as a contradiction, where it said, hey, bear each other's burdens, bear your own burden. Why are you bearing others' burdens? For the person that's overtaken in a fall, help that person, help bear it. How do you keep yourself from being that? By proving your own work and doing it right. Okay? There's no contradiction in these. Okay? None whatsoever.
Well, also, it's not like, even if someone helps you bear your burden, it's not like you're going to stop bearing it. You're going to keep bearing it.
Right. All right. And you will. All right, going on, it says this. Verse 6, let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. There's two ways that goes, okay? Number one, with that thing in communicating in the Bible is a lot more than just talking, okay? The communication of our faith has a lot to do. It's your whole interaction with someone, okay? What you communicate to them. Who, first of all, who teaches you the word? The Holy Ghost. God does. Communicate to him in all good things. You have someone in this church that teaches it. I do. You have Sunday school teachers, other ones, Pastor Hayne. Communicate to us in all good things. All right? Do that. It goes on, it says this, be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Now, it's interesting because that comes immediately after telling you to communicate unto him in all good things. Now, we're going to end with that. Dale, why don't you close us in prayer?
Yeah, Father, we thank you for today. Thank you for your grace and mercy. Lord, I thank you for what we were able to hear here. Lord, may we just take it home, put it to use in our life, Lord. And I ask that you would even continue to change us, not just in the church house, but more at home, Lord. I thank you so much for what you've already done. I pray that you bless everybody who's traveling. Get them home safely, Lord. Be with us tonight. Bless us, and we'll thank you for it all. In Jesus' holy and precious name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen. David, it's good to see you here tonight. Yep.